Hello, everyone. Welcome to an episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. I'm joined today by Sahar Masachi, co-founder and executive director of the Integrity Institute. Welcome to London, Sahar.
Thank you. It's my first time. I'm loving it so far. And indeed, I am a literal human. So glad to be here.
Yes, you. I think you're the first guest who ever claimed to be one of us. So we appreciate that very much. How was your trip over, first of all, from the States?
I just don't ever want to take a red eye again.
Fair.
But I have to say, it was like 9 a.m. London time. I'm getting off the flight just in a daze. And there's this easy instructions, this beautiful train station.
Yeah.
And the train is so quiet.
Yeah.
And then I get off and like wait for a bus. And the bus is just so nicely designed with like a big window to see what's up. I'm having a lot of fun.
That's good.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Yeah. And like we want to take advantage of your trip and get you in here. And yeah, it's one of the things I appreciate about London. One of the reasons I founded a company here is because it works, you know, for all its chaos and craziness. But yeah, I'm grateful you're enjoying it too. So first things first, for our audience, just want to kind of introduce you here. We're excited to welcome you. You're the executive director and co-founder of the Integrity Institute. So it's a nonprofit think tank that's run by a community of integrity professionals working towards a better social internet. So first things first, like sort of what is the social internet, if you could kind of just frame it for our audience?
Oh, yeah. It's one of those things that like, you know, the meme of trying to make fetch happen?
Yeah.
It might be just us trying to make fetch happen. Okay. But the idea is like, social media is way too limiting a term, right? It includes dating apps, gaming apps, like AI, social networks. We want to cover all that. Why not say social platforms? Mm-hmm. Well, that presupposes it's a platform as opposed to a protocol. So we just, I don't know, I guess I just came up with that term to cover all of it well enough. But, you know, another way to think about it is like the internet of people interacting with each other.
Yeah, interesting. And just to sort of frame where you've come from, would love to understand. So you're a programmer, you're an activist. You've previously worked at Facebook as part of their civic team to kind of protect democracy. You've helped Wikimedia achieve financial stability and founded a couple of startups along the way. So just curious, like, how did you end up at the Integrity Institute? How did you end up co-founding the Integrity Institute after that sort of string of, high profile gigs, I guess?
Oh, man. Gosh, how long do I have?
Yeah. As long as you need.
All right. Well, let's see. So in the beginning, there was chaos and God created order. And so my parents are from Iran and they were both refugees from Iran who fled as children for their lives because they were Jews to Israel, the only country that would take them. And then when I was 2 years old, my mom tells a story of during the Gulf War, Iraq was, you know, sending Scud missiles into Israel and like just into cities. Every family got an airtight tent and a gas mask in case of chemical weapons attack. And so these air raid sirens were going off and I'm, you know, bawling. I'm like 1.5 years old. My mom and dad are wearing a gas mask and shoving me into this tent. And my mom looks at my dad and says, "This is no way to raise a child."
Wow.
So I moved to the States and that was my family's story. You know, the story of like, you know, my mom seeing her friends dead on the street during the Iranian Revolution, killed for being Jewish. And so what I got from that was a sense of, I don't know, like civilization in the best sense of the term, being very fragile. And it's like it's important for us to safeguard it and sort of expand the boundaries of freedom more and more. Otherwise, they'll snap back. And at the same time, I just happen to be very good at computers. And it's hard being good at computers and also having another interest because, you know, society really wants you to work on computers in the sense of that's where all the money is and the, you know, it's the easy default path. I tried a lot of stuff growing up in my 20s. I was a community organizer, a digital campaigner is the term now. We didn't use that term back then, or at least I didn't. I was a housing justice person. I was at Occupy. I helped run a gubernatorial race. I also kept founding startups. And I say startups, like I was young. They were not very good. And eventually I try to figure out what do I do next? And I said, I want a resume. I want a network. I want skills. And I want enough money so that the next time I'm really needed for something, I can show up, be taken seriously, be able to do it for six months to a year unpaid, bring people with me, et cetera. And I thought that thing was going to be, I don't know, Occupy Wall Street. It didn't turn out that way. And what happened was I joined Facebook very much as like, this is a company that will give me these things, very transactional. And I started off on the growth team. And the growth team was the team, you know, making sure that people kept using the app and use the app. And I was on the friending team. And I thought, oh my gosh, my job is friendship. I'm going to help people be better friends through Facebook. But it was a growth team. So actually, it meant that I was on the retention team. And getting people enough Facebook friends is important to stop them from leaving the app. And actually, I felt like a drug dealer. Like, my job was to get people hooked. I didn't like it. I switched teams as fast as I could to the civic engagement team, which was fantastic. It was taking an app that people actually used and putting, you know, civic features inside of it, whereas often people will take civic features and make an app that no one uses, which doesn't seem to work. So that was cool. And then the scandal started hitting.
Yeah. Was this like around 2020 or place us in time, I guess? Yeah.
Like mid to early 2017.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure. IRA scandal, Cambridge Analytica, mm-hmm. and we turned into a civic integrity team and stopped. It was like we stopped doing things like, hey, you should vote and here's who's on the ballot and stuff like that around the world, and started trying to figure out how people were messing with the app to erode democracy, mess elections, stuff like that. Man, I guess that's already a long story, but the rest of the story is short. It was very cool. Learned a lot of internal contradictions, as they say. Left, started talking about my experiences. People treated me like a genius. And I said, that's cool. I think I'm pretty smart, but really, I'm just some guy. Let me get all my old coworkers together and all the other people working at the other companies who are doing this. And because of my community organizer training, it was just very much like, stop. Don't make it all about you. Make it about an institution. And so try to make an institution.
And so is there a connection between the civic engagement team at Facebook mm-hmm. being changed into the civic integrity team mm-hmm. and what you eventually named your new company, I guess? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're a 501c3, mm-hmm. so a charity for British people. But I just really like the term integrity. It's mm-hmm. about structural integrity. Mm. That's the main idea.
Yeah.
But also has this idea of ethical integrity.
Yeah.
And you need both.
It's a powerful word because it's just always like, it's like doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it, you know, and there's a certain level of like transparency and honesty that has to come with that. So definitely appreciate, you know, we get a lot of credit for naming our company what we did, Literal Humans, mm-hmm. it sticks, it's, you know, people like it, but like appreciate naming things. It's such an important like step in any organization's journey, I think. So
yeah, people call the field often like trust and safety. Mm-hmm. It's like, should you trust companies?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Should safety be the only value that you're trying to work on? Like, probably not. Like, what about free expression?
You mentioned that people started treating you like a genius. Why do you think that was?
People in my line of work just didn't talk.
Mm. Because they were worried, scared about revealing things like company secrets or something? Or
Yeah. There's a real sense of like, if you say the wrong thing, you'll be sued or blackballed and stuff like that.
Did you fear that when you left Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Did you get any heat?
No, but I also... You know, I was at the Berkman Klein Center at Harvard mm-hmm. University, mm-hmm. and I love Berkman. And so I felt like I had enough institutional backing there that I could sort of speak out, like not speak out, just like explain things, mm-hmm. not fear as much, mm-hmm. you know? The field's been around for, depending how you look at it, 20 years or, you know, all of human history, or, you know, just a few years, really. Mm-hmm. So it was new enough to most people in it that they weren't established convening organizations, journals, blogs, like there was nothing. So mm-hmm. There was a great first mover advantage for us too, or depending how you look at it, second mover, but it was, you know, early enough.
So you've given us the background. So mm-hmm. you're now sort of leading the Integrity Institute, and your focus is the social internet. Just to sort of set the scene for our audience, you know, we're moving into one of the most pivotal election years in history. 4.2 billion people with over half of the world's population are voting in over 80 countries, plus the EU. And there's this question that people have about the role that social networks in particular will play in this election. And are they doing enough? And I'm sure you have a particular perspective on that, having done work at Facebook. But I guess like a broader framing question that we talked about before is like, what about social media is broken, and kind of, you know, how do we, you know, put together a conceptual framework of the problem to start to answer this, you know, near-term question about like what's going to happen this year in terms of these elections?
Well, Paul, you've done so many of these episodes. You tell me, how is social media broken?
I mean, we have a lot of ideas about it, but I think what Facebook's doing, for example, getting out of the news business is potentially a good start to a previous problem. Is like, should people be getting their news from a platform like Facebook that kind of mixes, as you said earlier, like, you know, it's focused on sales and growth and like retention, things like that. And obviously, as we've seen in corporate, you know, sort of owned media, like, that there's a moral hazard there. There's a tension, you know? So I think that's one area, but I'd be curious to hear like what you all are working on and how you're trying to advance and protect the social internet and fix what's broken.
Yeah. Even your example is such a good framing device because Facebook says he's going to downrank or remove political content. Mm. What counts as political,
yeah.
right? Does like, I would say the existence of, let's say, ExxonMobil mm-hmm. probably wouldn't count as political for them, but anything that, let's say, Greenpeace does probably would.
Yeah.
And that already is sort of putting a thumb on a scale, like, unavoidably. And then there's also this question of, so there's that question of, like, values. Mm-hmm. There's also a question of, like, feasibility. Mm-hmm. I remember a few years ago where talking about the NFL in the U.S. Mm-hmm. counted as political. Mm-hmm. Now it probably doesn't. 10 years ago, it definitely didn't. What counts as political, even as like an empirical question of like what happens to be in the news that we'd categorize as politics, mm-hmm. keeps changing. Mm-hmm. And so actually the way that you would have to filter out political content means for every country, for every language in that country, having a reasonably up-to-date classifier of what counts as politics, that actually takes a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I don't believe like one of the things I've seen from Facebook in particular, when I work there, is like unwillingness to actually invest in that combinatorial explosion. So there's the sort of like, at some degree, it's a little impossible, but also they're just not going to put in the work to make it happen.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of conversations that we have, like trade-offs and feasibility and stuff like that. Anyway, does that make sense, first of all?
Yeah, I mean, I guess another way to ask it, though, is like, what's the ideal? Like, what is the social internet that you and your organization are fighting for? What does it look like? Yeah. What does it feel like?
I mean, the internet should be fun. It should be wholesome.
Just fun.
It should definitely be fun again.
Yeah.
It should delight, and it should help us be healthier in mind and spirit and so on and so forth. And instead what it is force feeding us junk food.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much everything like from TikTok, Reddit, Facebook, YouTube, like any kind of feed or thing that's like a recommendation system works kind of like this. There's a robot and its job is to fetch you content, and it's going to fetch you the content more or less that you're most likely to consume, the content that you're marginally most likely to consume.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like, you know, fancy engineering about how it does this.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like you have a lot of engineers working really hard to figure out this, to create a robot that can figure it out.
Is it all junk food though? Like I've seen content, like I've seen great travel content, for example, on TikTok. Like, you know, there's like someone told me about French pharmacy talk. So like when you go to France and you don't know how to speak French, they sort of do a walkthrough in English, I guess, for you to understand how to say and purchase different things. So that's valuable travel content. Or I've seen content for, you know, positive masculinity, for example, and content that's trying to fight, you know, on Instagram, there's one account called like Men Who Like to Take Baths or something like that, where like they, you know, as one reporter sits with a man in who's taking a bath, in the middle of taking a bath, obviously he's covered, and talks to him about positive masculinity. So like, is it all junk food? And if not, how do we raise up the stuff that isn't junk?
I would say like you're more likely to eat a beautiful cake by like a professional than like, I don't know, a Snickers bar.
Mm-hmm.
And a Snickers bar is so much easier to produce. So like, yeah, quality stuff does better than non-quality stuff, mm-hmm. more or less. But creating things that are sort of like hit your buttons, mm-hmm. that are cheap and easy are just going to outcompete things that take a lot of time and effort. Mm-hmm. And you can find the things that take time and effort, mm-hmm. and like kind of force the rope, like keep yelling at the robot, but it'll keep sort of slipping the leash, mm-hmm. and trying to grab stuff from you. And there's like constraints on the robot too. So the robot, like in classic Facebook or classic social media, it'll only fetch you stuff made by your friends,
mm-hmm.
which is actually like a real constraint.
Mm-hmm.
Like your friends aren't going to make you like powdered sugar laced with heroin. Another problem is like the default ways people talk about the work is like, mm-hmm. well, just tell the robot that like, you know, sugar is bad or something, like not to use sugar, not to account for sugar in its rankings, right? Because mm-hmm. like we know some things are spammy or viral or whatever. Well, you know, the robot still understands brown sugar. And mm-hmm. there's like, because it's not just your friends, but a whole universe of people making content, they're going to realize they can use brown sugar and still get that boost. And so at like the real problem is like the robot needs to have an understanding of quality,
mm-hmm.
and needs to be trained on not just what's the next thing you're going to eat, which is going to be ice cream, mm-hmm. probably. If you're stuffed, you'll still eat a little ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, like have an understanding of like, yeah, quality and less engagement as what it pays attention to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. So thinking about that, like I'm curious about what's your pathway to get to that ideal? Like, mm-hmm. like what, how are you your organization, your partner organizations, how are you sort of, because that's not going to happen overnight, and you're facing like a massive mm-hmm. like amount of opposition. I mean, it used to work for Facebook. So like, curious what you think the steps are in that process. Like, what does a 5-year plan look like to protect the social internet and make it that place that you're talking about?
Yeah. And just again, like another person would say that like maybe the problem is like ad supported business models or whatever. Mm-hmm. Another person would talk about like child addiction and child safety. Mm-hmm. And like, they're all kind like, a lot of these are heads of the same hydra, and some of them aren't. But there are people inside of companies who want to do the right thing. And what they lack is the knowledge of what to do. There's other people in companies who don't believe them. And so what you got to give them is credibility of like, this is not just some guy's opinion. This mm-hmm. is like the considered opinion of the profession, that these are standards or mm-hmm. best practice. And there's more down that path of like, to the extent that it's a problem of competence and knowledge, you really can help. The problem isn't just a question of competence and knowledge. So also, civil society organizations, policymakers, et cetera, exist. And there's a lot of civil society organizations that are building like the muscle mm-hmm. to like try and get something done. The problem is they don't actually know what to do. They might think they know, but like they don't actually understand how decisions are made at companies, like what they would want, like the policy proposals they have would actually often backfire or just not work. So our job is to talk to the people who are building muscles and say like, actually, here's how things work for real. Mm-hmm. So you can like, you know, orient yourself in the appropriate way. Or talk to policymakers directly and say like, hey, you have goals of like a healthier internet where like kids don't kill themselves. That's wonderful. Us mm-hmm. too. Here's how you can actually achieve those goals. Like here's the education that you need, not from an advocacy group, but from like scientists in white lab coats of mm-hmm. how it all works. Like what's a recommender system? What are the mental frameworks you can use? And then, you know, you policy experts can figure out what to do about it. But like, this is the education you need to do it well.
So I want to like bring you down to street level and get more specific. Like I want more specific examples from you. So uh-huh. like you've said that, you know, social media companies are the new cities, that you all are the city planners, for example. Yeah. So like, give us examples of speed bumps and sewage systems, for example, that you're building in the, for the next online world. Like what could people expect to see in this new ideal social internet that you're trying to build?
Okay. It's hard to talk about what exists as opposed to what doesn't exist.
Okay. You can do both.
Yeah. So just to catch people up, like mm-hmm. if the internet is a city mm-hmm. or social media companies or platforms are cities, mm-hmm. people are like attacking each other. It's awful. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Real cities don't have this problem more or less, right? Like the order of magnitude of the problem is much better. Why is that? Mm-hmm. Part of it is because people can teleport online. They put on disguises. They can clone themselves. Mm-hmm. All these sorts of superpowers that we don't have in the real world. And so our laws and intuitions and so on haven't caught up to these superpowers. And, you know, in 100 years, we'll probably have figured it out.
But what are the alternative behaviors if people aren't attacking? Like at some point you can't just say, hey, this is what people are not doing anymore. You have to say, this is what they're doing instead. Yeah. So what are those alternative behaviors that people are doing instead of attacking each other?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all the good parts of the internet that mm-hmm. are around right now that you talked mm-hmm. about, right? Like interesting conversations mm-hmm. that are from people from different points, like not even points of view, but sort of different backgrounds, mm-hmm. getting to understand each other. It's like, you know, the YouTube videos of people teaching you how to like plant a garden or get really excited about like bicycle maintenance. It's Numberphile and Kyrgyzat and Hank Green and the other vlog brother who are Crash Course World History and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just people playing around and having flash mobs.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, it's you know, people having sort of longer, slower conversations maybe about things that actually make them happy mm-hmm, mm-hmm. as opposed to maybe scoring points or getting angry, because turns out getting angry is great for juicing your numbers.
And how much of this is sort of like, I'm conscious that there maybe is a process of like creative destruction here, right? Like, so some stuff has to get torn down. Maybe there needs to be regulation. There needs to be sort of, I don't know, breaking up with some of these big companies. Do you advocate for that, by the way, or what's your sort of stance on that?
Our institutional stance mm-hmm. is that our members are split on anti-monopoly stuff mm-hmm. and also Section 230, and therefore we don't have a position because we reflect our members.
Interesting. Okay. And I guess another part of the mm-hmm. creative destruction is actually the creative part, right? Mm-hmm. Is sort of like, hopefully there'll be new, and this is of particular interest for me because I'm actually personally interested in building one of these, but like new structures, new social, social internet structures that have all these positive qualities and ideally fewer or none of the negative ones. So like, I'm curious about your take
about
on
building blocks.
Yeah,
right?
The building, like what are these new positive, like I can think of a few, right? And one of them I'm actually like working with some folks on trying to build, but like, what are the new ones that you would like to see take the places of what's happening with Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff now?
Yeah. Okay. Still have feed ranking, mm-hmm. still have recommender systems, mm-hmm. but have, instead of just ranking by a combination of recency and engagement, rank by a combination of recency, some engagement, and quality, and have a real quality score. That's huge.
Quality is measured by whom and like what criteria,
yeah.
I guess?
Yeah. So Google does quality. It has a sense of quality.
Right.
And
right.
They have a 75-page booklet. It's free. You can read online. Mm-hmm. And they pay people like $80,000 a year. Mm. And their job is to go apply these set of heuristics and rules and hand label websites.
Yeah, wow.
And then it trains, like what it tries to do is train a robot to predict what these hand labeled scores would be.
Mm-hmm.
So Google has a very, like 85 pages or whatever it is,
yeah,
of ideas about what quality is. And it's not about content. It's things like, is there an author? Can you click the author to see their bio?
Right.
Are they a real person? Can you see their photo? If it's a journalistic seeming article, does it involve actual like new facts on the ground journalism, or is it regurgitation? Like there's all these sort of questions that aren't about, you know, the ideological content of what's being said, but like markers of actual quality. You could do that. Like this is like a, like there's this weird allergy that some companies have to that kind of thinking about quality, but like Google already solved it.
Yeah. So is your sort of advocacy like, hey, you know, at least one major tech company has solved this. You should adopt Google like tactics to ensure quality on your platform. Is that part of what you advocate for? Or
well, I mean, I would. I mean, like, look, my co-founder loves Google.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say I'm more measured.
Okay.
But I think that like they do that right,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not saying that YouTube is doing it right either. But like,
right.
Google Search specifically
mm-hmm.
has, you know, a quality score that they've thought about and they do well. And like, even before they test on real humans, before they try something out, they do a test of how would we have done in the past if we had this change, and then check it.
That's interesting.
Before trying it on real human beings, which is cheap and easy.
Yeah.
And you think other companies would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think many of them don't. They just skip straight to testing on live human beings.
Because it's cheaper to just skip that step? Or why don't they, what you reckon?
It's easier.
Yeah.
So building blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Posts, you can only post a certain number of times per day.
Interesting.
Which could be like 10 or 20 or even 50, but
mm-hmm.
like not like 10,000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Front Porch Forum is a great social media platform.
Front Porch Forum?
Yeah, they're great.
Okay.
They're in Vermont. So there's that.
What makes them great?
Tied to real life identities, a real sense of what is in and out of bounds,
mm-hmm.
Much less algorithmic amplification.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a posting limit. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
So you want, don't post quite so often.
Mm-hmm.
You want to remove incentives for, like, you want to not have a reshare button,
mm-hmm.
and you don't want all this stuff that wants things to go viral.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Clickhole? They had the thing, like, all content deserves to go viral.
Yeah.
I'm just anti-Clickhole. Like, not all content deserves to go viral. Like,
yeah, certainly not.
like, remember, like, going viral used to mean, like, oh, everyone at school or whatever is talking about this thing.
Mm.
Things go viral maybe once every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what it should mean.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, like, things go micro-viral all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just bad because it gives you incentives to, like, exploit people's, like, lizard brain stuff.
Yeah.
And they'll just smash that reshare button before they, like, really digest it. And, like, if it's really passes the bar of, like, quality to share with all your friends.
It also, like, loops back to the quality issue that you mentioned. Like, because if, like, it's like, if all these things are going viral, then what the hell does virality really mean? But, like, it's also ties into the sort of perverse incentives of the social media companies because it's like, they benefit from things going viral. So for them, to a large degree, like, more things going viral on their platform drives more engagement and, like, you know, membership and all that stuff. And so, like, I think it's important for people to, like, really take a hard look at virality and what it means, because there's, like, dollars and cents behind that, you know, like, it's just, I don't think people are realizing that they're being spoon-fed viral content because it benefits the powers that be, not because it's actually high quality or actually popular in, like, a pure sense of the word, I guess.
Yeah, and, like, it's like a what's the term? It's worse than a crime. It's a mistake. There's leaked research that is in the public domain. That I had no, you know, I didn't have anything to do with doing the research or leaking it. So I can just cite it. There's a team at Facebook that looked at all the sort of integrity interventions, you could say, all the stuff that they wanted to do. And they looked at the people who got those and the people who didn't. And they studied the people who didn't to see how they behaved differently. And a normal test in this kind of company, maybe 2 weeks long.
Yeah.
And in those 2 weeks, the people who didn't get the protections were on Facebook more.
Yeah.
So it was good for growth. After some number of months, they were on Facebook less. But the decision of whether or not to ship a thing is usually made in that 2-week window.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to like over, you know, generally have to overcome internal obstacles to like ship something that actually helps people.
Mm.
So it's one of those things where like short-term growth looks better if you don't maintain quality.
Right.
Long-term, people are just going to keep throwing up on all the sugar you're giving them and yeah. will just like walk away.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I've been off Facebook since 2017 and have not looked back. And honestly, my life is better for it. I go home to States and family members and people are like, oh, you're missing all the fights and arguments on Facebook. I'm like, am I? You know what I mean? Yeah. And like occasionally I'll get an invite to some event that's on Facebook and I can't access it, but it's really not. It's just like, so yeah, I'm definitely one of those people that eventually threw up on all the disgusting icing and sugar. I'm curious about like your broader sort of outlook on building that, you know, more positive social internet.
Yeah.
How much of it do you think is like technical solves? You know, you called out some technical solves in terms of like how the platforms operate and what they, you know, what sort of functions they have in place. How much of it is sort of adaptive and more human, you know, like cause I worry that like, this is just us. Like this is like, I worry, you know, I feel like that we keep coming back to social media and like things happen and it's like, you know, school shootings and guns in America. Like they just keep happening and we keep saying, this is not who we are, but like, this is indeed who we are. It's habitual. It's, you know, it's us, you know, and like, I worry about that. I have quite a pessimistic issue, you know, so like, maybe help me find the optimism here. Like, how much of this is us and not just humans behaving that way and the companies that serve us? And how much of this is like, if we put some technical stuff in place, we can have a better social internet?
Humans can change, mm-hmm. first of all. Mm-hmm. And they probably change over the course of like decades. And we've invented a set of technologies that's like civilization, right? Yep. Like, what's stopping newspapers from becoming tabloids? Mm-hmm. Tabloids do sell better. It's the larger system of like financing, public shaming, like norms that we built around them. In part of our like standard pattern when we talk in the Institute, we talk about this thing in that Mark Zuckerberg published in 2018. I use a lot of Facebook analogies because it's like still big and easy, but like really we cover every platform and maybe I should start talking about Reddit more or Twitch more.
Yeah, yeah. Reddit's super interesting.
You know, he happened to publish this thing and and it was a chart that says, as content gets closer to policy violating, people engage with it more. It's an argument made to say like, this is human nature. And it goes on to say what we want is to like bend the curve down as it gets closer to policy violating and engagement should go down. Yeah, that's the vision. I share that vision. And there's a pessimistic way of saying isn't all humans, and there's an optimistic way of saying isn't all humans. So let's talk about negating the pessimism first, maybe.
Yeah.
So humans want tabloids, right? Mm-hmm. Like literal news companies, like the reputable ones, will rewrite headlines to say the like inflammatory thing that's kind of the opposite of what the author wrote, right? Yeah. Like that's
clickbait. Yeah.
That's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
What an engagement ranking system does, engagement-based ranking system does is say, okay, I, the robot, notice that things that I want to find things that get more engagement. Mm-hmm. Turns out that bad things get more engagement. I'm going to show more bad things. That's the heart of the problem. A human being at a like newspaper or whatever would notice that too.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do it as much because they have, I don't know, a sense of shame, a sense of like, I have to be a human who signed off on, you know, showing pictures of like underage girls to creepers online, right? Yeah. Like there's like a fundamental human limit that people won't cross. And if they do, they're rare enough that you can sort of as a society sort of like zoom in on them and like hold them accountable.
Yeah.
What the, you know, Reddits and Twitches or whatever the world do is all the companies do is mix in good, healthy stuff from your friends and like really terrible stuff.
Yeah.
So that you can't quite hold them accountable because they're saying like, well, it's all mixed in together. Like anyway, so to the question of isn't all just humans? Yeah, but humans have been the way that humans are for centuries, and yet we haven't had this problem because we built out a sense of institutions to hold that in check. And one way of holding that in check is to say, if you think about a feed, it's kind of a mediator of a marketplace of supply of content and demand for content.
Yep.
And what these companies implicitly think their job is to make it as frictionless and as free a market as possible to match that supply and demand.
Yeah.
And actually you can say like, no, we don't have to be a perfectly frictionless matcher. We can have a sense of values and qualities. And you know, just because the demand is high doesn't mean that we're going to like give that access to the supply right away.
So how much, last question for you, how much of this is just comes down to regulation?
Yeah.
Like the like governments create markets. They've allowed the companies to sort of create these as free as possible markets, as you just said, on their platforms. Like what's your sort of overall take on and what your membership's take, I should say, on regulation?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I was like crescendoing to a point.
No worries.
The optimistic thing about humans, I guess, is just simple as what I said. Like human beings have solved problems like this mm-hmm. throughout civilization. We can solve it again. Mm-hmm. Like, in a way, it's just like a problem of like lead in children's toys.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know, like bad meat in meat packing, or like mouse droppings in cereal. We know how to solve this problem. If you're, I don't know, like pick your ideology and you have a way of solving this problem. Is it transparency and like, you know, labeling so that the, you know, people can make an informed choice? Is it inspections and whatever? Is it strong unions of people who can report problems? Is it really heavy fines and relying on the court system? There's like all different ways that, depending on the kind of problem, like we've evolved to deal with negligence.
Yeah.
It's just negligence.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just another version of lead in children's toys. And so like maybe speaking for myself, I don't have my membership, but like probably like, I don't know, like is the problem like pursued in, is the answer pursued in the courts? Is the answer like write legislation that like makes regulation happen? Is it like getting really in the weeds of regulation? Is it voluntary corporate responsibility? That's kind of outside of our lane. Our lane is to say, here's what good looks like. Mm-hmm. If you truly wanted to solve the problem, here's what companies would do. Here's the data they would make transparent. Here's the sort of things they would make happen. And like,
so your job is more to inform, you know, all parties of like, hey, whether you're a company that wants to do right by people, government, or, you know, some other institution, like, here's the ideal. Here's what the social internet should look like. Does that?
Yeah. Like, or like how to build it responsibly, I'd say.
Okay. Okay.
And like, y'all can have a fight about the best way to like implement this, but like you need the people who run companies or work for companies to do X and not Y.
Yeah.
And how we get there, I have some ideas.
But, yeah.
You know, people can reasonably disagree on that, but mm-hmm. they don't need to disagree on like what building responsibly looks like. We know, we can just tell you.
Yeah. And I just want to, like, as we wrap up, I want to appreciate your role in the space, because like obviously there's so many people advocating and like sort of fighting for these bills and sort of, you know, protesting and all that stuff. There's a space for that. There's folks on the other side who like they just want it to be a completely free market and just let, you know, let it all run amok, as we've seen. And then there's folks like yourself who are kind of sat there and saying, hey, here's what good looks like. Here's, you know, the substance of how we build a truly beneficial to humans social internet, as it were. I think that's really important. So it's good to it's good to hear about the work that you're doing, and yeah, I just appreciate you jumping on the pod today. So
yeah, thank you. And I don't know if this is a bonus content or something. Yeah. I'm just, you asked me what these building blocks are, and I still haven't really told you. Some parts of a social platform are easier to abuse than others. Mm-hmm. Before you have, when you make a new account, mm-hmm. have access to the things that are harder to abuse, and maybe have to build up some sort of karma system or reputation system to access the stuff that's harder to abuse. Rank by quality, not engagement. Be really careful about the recommendations of who to follow or who to join. Ideally, it'd be more of a list vetted by human beings as opposed to robots. Another thing, like, there is a level of just human curation decision making that matters. And actually, this comes to like the Reddit versus Facebook groups problem. Reddit subreddits more or less work. Facebook groups more or less don't.
Yeah.
Theoretically, they're the same thing.
Which is moderation, right? Is it just moderation that gets...
You know, it's a group of people with like a mod who's in charge of like keeping things orderly.
Right.
And on Reddit, they mostly do that. Mm-hmm. On Facebook, they absolutely don't. Yeah. And part of it is the seed crystal of humans, right? Like the culture of Reddit at the beginning was such that people actually took responsibility.
Yeah.
And when they created subreddits and those subreddits got big, staff at Reddit actually used the platform and had a sense of what the biggest subreddits were. So they'd check in on them and they'd hold those mods accountable, more or less with like exceptions, for doing a bad job or making a bad community.
Yep.
Don't have that or didn't have that at Facebook. There's like scale problems, but there's also just like human level curation problems of setting the culture early, making sure it's a good culture. You know, what's the difference between Tinder and JSwipe?
Yeah.
Or, Tinder and Bumble. At the end of the day, it really is just the users.
Yeah.
Same code, really.
Yeah. But there's something to be said, and that's a good answer for the previous question on like, is it humans? Is it sort of the tech, like setting the container and the context up in the right way and the culture at the beginning so that the human behavior that follows is curated or sort of arranged in a more appropriate way. Well, thank you for that. We'll have to end there. That was an awesome conversation. We got loads of good content that we'll share with our audience. Before we go, let the audience know where they can find out more about you and your work at Integrity Institute.
You can find out more about the Integrity Institute by going to integrityinstitute.org. A recent piece that we have that I'm quite proud of is, why does Google searching for bulimia on Instagram give you different, like much better results than searching bulimia within Instagram?
Wow.
really good piece. And to find out more about me, you can go to sahar.io, or I have two Substacks. Nice. One is, you know, sahar.substack.com, which is it's called Growth and What Comes Next.
Yeah.
And then the other one is yento.substack.com, where I match up my friends with romance, jobs, apartments, projects with each other.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, we'll be sure to share those links in the episode description. And yeah, just super grateful for you taking time out of your busy schedule and your visit to London this week to sit with us. So thank you so much.
I mean, this may have been the highlight of my trip.
Oh gosh. Well, thank you so much for jumping on. This has been another great episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. We've been joined today by Sahar Masachi, the co-founder and executive director of Integrity Institute. Thanks again, Sahar.
Thanks, man.
Sweet. And also should say, please like, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating for Tech Can't Save Us so we can keep adding more great guests like Sahar.
The only good share button is the share button that you smash for this episode.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Sahar. Appreciate it.